good evening. It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Ellie MacArthur, Henry Walker, and Eliza Lee. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. For the first time ever, researchers are studying whether non-hallucinogenic doses of psilocybin, the active compound found in psychedelic mushrooms, could help to treat generalized anxiety disorder. The Kingston Health Sciences Center Research Institute is leading this first-of-its-kind Health Canada-approved Phase 2A clinical trial. The trial will be testing the daily, at-home use of microdose psilocybin to see if it can safely ease anxiety symptoms without the trip. Generalized anxiety disorder affects about 5% of Canadian adults, more than 1.6 million people. And while it's common, many existing treatments can be slow to work or cause side effects that make long-term use difficult. Principal investigator of the study, Dr. Claudio Suarez, sat down with CFRC to tell us more about this first-of-its-kind clinical trial and what it could mean for the future of anxiety treatment. To start us off, I was wondering if you'd like to just introduce yourself for our listeners.
Well, my name is Claudio Suarez. I'm a psychiatrist here at Queen's University. I'm professor of psychiatry at Queen's. I'm also a clinician who sees patients in the medical and surgical floors from psychiatry. I work also in oncology and palliative care. And I do research. I'm the director of the Center for Psychedelics Health and Research at Providence Care, and also doing research on psychedelics here at KGH.
Great, thank you. And getting into our topic today, I was wondering if you could start us off by speaking to the gaps and challenges in current treatments that have kind of led to us turning to exploring these alternative methods.
For sure. So as you know, we have a lot of people suffering from depression and anxiety, like more kind of a clinical disabling anxiety, like 1 out of 6 Canadians have anxiety. And not everybody do well, not everyone does well on medications, right? So we have psychotherapies that are quite effective for anxiety. But again, not everybody has access to psychotherapy and not everybody responded to psychotherapy. And the medications that we have are primarily antidepressants that we use for anxiety. Some patients responded well, but they can't tolerate side effects. They have, you know, weight gain or sexual dysfunction. So we're always looking for new treatments for anxiety to have another tool in our toolbox. And psychedelics are emerging as kind of promising treatments for anxiety. So that's why one of the things we're looking for is the use of a low dose or microdosing psychedelics. In this case, psilocybin for anxiety.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could speak a bit to the background and evidence so far, just where we're at with psilocybin specifically.
Sure. So psilocybin is the active ingredient of the magic mushrooms, right? So they have been used in like recreationally, but also in ritual and religious ceremonies for many, many, many years. And probably over the last 10 or 15 years, we're kind of experiencing like a renaissance in research on psychedelics. People are rediscovering psychedelics as potential medical treatments and trying to apply what we know about psychedelics for many years into the medical setting. So we see a lot of studies happening in psychedelics, particularly psilocybin, for depression, anxiety, to reduce cravings for alcohol in patients who have alcohol use disorder, and for PTSD as well. Although PTSD is more MDMA, that has been studied for that. But the psychedelics, Christina, in most studies, the predominant school of thoughts for psychedelics is to use what we call macrodoses, right? So people have a dose that induces changes in their perception of the environment, and perception of their selves. That's what we call the altered states of consciousness, or the trip. It's like people go through a hallucinogenic trip, which is it's an epiphenomenal. So there's a lot of things happening in your brain at the time that you do that. But that requires patients to come to a medical setting and use that medication and be under observation for at least 6 to 8 hours. So it's labor intensive. There are some more risks and side effects involved. The more recent school of thoughts were, in parallel to that, we're looking at using psilocybins in lower doses that will not cause that whole experience of psychedelics from the hallucinogenic point of view, but will still have beneficial effects in your brain, maybe increasing neuroplasticity, maybe helping you to reduce the ruminative thoughts or the, you know, constant worrying that you have and anxiety. And they seem to work well. So there are some promising studies, but they have not been tested in a more kind of a, I would say, structural way. So that's the first study that we are aware of that's using microdosing, deliver at home, to be used at home for anxiety.
Mm-hmm. And again, you're talking about microdosing there and kind of getting into the nitty gritty. I was wondering if you could dive a bit deeper into what this means, either in practical or neurological terms, sure. As opposed to, you know, going on a full macrodose and having those experiences.
For sure. So when we talk about macrodose or higher doses of psilocybins, usually we're talking about taking at least 25 or 30 milligrams of psilocybin, which then will induce that altered states of consciousness or, you know, what recreationally people call a trip, right? And that is probably the way or the mechanism by which psilocybin works in macrodoses. So it's a boost of effects in at once that cause a cascade of reactions in your brain, increase neuroplasticity, and then opens that what we call more flexibility in your cognition to deal with anxiety. And that is done in combination with psychotherapy. So the notion is that you're using the macrodose to make it easier for patients to engage in psychotherapy and make it easier for them to be more cognitively flexible, to be more psychologically open to psychotherapy. When we're using microdosing, you're usually using a much lower dose, so it's between 1 to 3 milligrams. The sweet spot that we're trying to study is around 3 milligrams because it's just below the threshold for changing your brain from the hallucinogenic point of view. So at that dose, you're using the pharmacological effects of the psilocybin. So you're not inducing the hallucinogenic trips. You're not inducing changes in your perception. It's almost like using the same pathway that we use in antidepressants, but without having the side effects of the antidepressants. So the idea here is to use psilocybin more as a medicine as opposed to a catalyst for psychotherapy.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Because I think a lot of people, I think about psychedelic treatment as the experience of the trip is more so what's solving your issues or helping you work through it. But this sounds like it's more like those chemical changes in your brain, and that it's a bit different. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So, and that's, you know, what you mentioned before, the psychedelic experience make it easier for you to do psychotherapy. This is probably the predominant classic way of thinking about psychedelics. And probably, I want to say 80 to 90% of the research on psychedelics so far has been focused on that way of delivering psychedelics. But we also know that psychedelics are neuroplastogens. So they change the brain plasticity, and they also have effects through serotonin in your brain, the same chemical that we use in antidepressants. So it's interacting with the same receptors that we use in medications, for instance, for depression and anxiety. So what we're looking at here is to benefit from, you know, slow doses or low dose of psilocybin delivered every day for a period of time, similar to what we do with other medications, but hopefully have a more enduring and less troubled from the side effect point of view that we have with antidepressants. So minimizing sexual dysfunction or weight gain or all the other side effects that sometimes are a major barrier for people to take medication for anxiety.
Mm-hmm. And getting into this clinical trial, what's that going to kind of look like, and what makes it such a first in Canada?
So this is the first time that we're aware of that Health Canada has approved a study to allow us to give patients microdosing psilocybin to bring it home and take it home. So as you know, psilocybin is illegal, so you cannot or you should not go and buy psilocybin anywhere. So in order for you to do studies on psilocybin, we have to apply to a lot of regulatory bodies, including Health Canada, to get permission to obtain the psilocybin and store the psilocybin. So that has been done for other studies as well. But this study in particular allow us to then have a protocol in which patients come and try psilocybin for the first time in our hospital. They stay here for a few hours. We make sure that they don't have any unusual responses to psilocybin. And then they can take the medication at home. So they go home with a 1 week's worth of medication, and then they can use the medication at home. We monitor that very closely. And then they come every week to be reassessed up to 4 weeks. So it's a 4 week trial. And then people who responded well can stay for another 4 weeks when we then randomize them to be either on placebo or to remain on psilocybin. So that we're going to be looking at if they have any withdrawal symptoms or rebound anxiety after using for 4 weeks. So the total study is 8 weeks, but the first 4 weeks, everybody knows you're taking medication. And then the next 4 weeks, we split them between placebo and medication.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, what kind of outcomes are you measuring?
Yeah, so this is a phase two trial. So the clinical trials have different phases. So phase one usually is what we're looking at if the new medication is toxic or trying to find the right spot, so to speak, on the dosing. So that's how we end up with a 3 milligram dosing for this study. So this is a phase two trial. Phase two trials are usually small trials, like less than 100 patients. When we're trying to look at primarily safety and tolerability. So we're looking at if patients have any side effects. We check their blood work to see if their, you know, kidneys are working well, their liver, their heart, to make sure that everything is okay prior to, but also make sure the medication doesn't impact their health in general. But we also collect some data on efficacy. So we look at scales for anxiety, measure their anxiety, their self-perception of anxiety, how well they are functioning at home or at work or at school. So there are a few measures that we use to look at success. And that study will inform, hopefully, a phase three trials. For phase three are larger trials, more like what we see when we're applying for new medications to Health Canada or FDA. We have to use a phase three trial. So these are larger trials. But this trial that we're doing, we will inform the next one if everything goes well.
Mm-hmm. And I was just going to ask you, just as a clinician and as a scientist, what excites you about diving into this research?
Well, so when I got involved with psychedelic research probably close to 3 or 4 years ago, when Queen's decided to put together a advisory board to look at psychedelic medicine. And I came from the field on psychiatry, mood disorders, but also see patients in oncology. So I was aware of the major gaps that we have in the treatments that we have for depression, anxiety, but also PTSD and oncology. A lot of patients with late stage cancer have what we call existential distress, and that really doesn't respond well to medication. And psychedelics have emerged in the last few years as a promising option for many of those patients. But there are not a lot of clinical trials happening in Canada. And I became fascinated with some of the options. And I saw and I've seen, I did a long training in U.S., close to 1 year on psychedelic research. And I've seen both patients and participants, but also videos with dramatic changes very quickly. So I became quite fascinated by the promising effects, but also very aware that psychedelic research comes with a lot of stigma, a lot of mistrust and misinformation. So getting involved in research, but also helping to destigmatize psychedelics and find the right population that can use, it became one of the areas that I'm quite interested in. So we created a center for psychedelics at Providence Care. We opened last year, and we're doing research both at Providence Care, but also at KGH as well.
Mm-hmm. And what are you hoping this means for the future of care in this area?
So I think if we can learn when and how psychedelics can be helpful, that will inform probably in a better way how can we use psychedelics in the medical setting versus recreational, which is one of the challenges with cannabis, for instance. Right? When cannabis became legalized, the research on cannabis suffered because a lot of the medical cannabis research became very difficult to conduct studies because people just go across the street and buy what they think they're buying, right, in terms of concentration and use. So what we're trying to do is to avoid that we make some of the mistakes that we made with cannabis in general, that we understand how psychedelics can be used safely for medical purpose. So then if or when psychedelics become legalized, we can clearly differentiate what is psychedelic use for medical practice versus psychedelics for recreation.
Once again, that was Dr. Claudio Suarez, who will be leading a first-of-its-kind study on the use of psychedelics to treat generalized anxiety disorder at the Kingston Health Sciences Center Research Institute. As one of the largest mental health research trials currently underway at KHSC, the study represents an important step in advancing evidence-based innovation in psychiatric care. As Dr. Suarez mentioned, researchers are currently seeking adults living with generalized anxiety disorder to join the study. To learn more or inquire about participation, you can contact the research team by email at cs.research@queensu.ca. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. This is Henry Walker with your campus news on CFRC's Campus Beat. Queen's University's homecoming weekend just took place from the 18th to 20th, drawing alumni, students, and visitors to campus and the surrounding Kingston area. Organized events included faculty receptions, the Queen's football game against Windsor, and alumni gatherings, which were all aimed at fostering connection and school spirit with current students and former. As in previous years, the weekend was accompanied by the enforcement of the University District Safety Initiative, or UDSI, a collaboration between the City of Kingston, Kingston Police, and Queen's University. The initiative is designed to promote community safety and reduce disruptions in the University District during high traffic periods such as homecoming and St. Patrick's Day weekend. Under the UDSI, individuals charged with certain provincial or municipal offenses, such as noise violations or public intoxication, may have their information shared with the university for possible review under the Student Code of Conduct, as well as increased fines and policing. The initiative is currently in effect starting previously on October 17th and will continue until November 2nd. The timeframe of the UDSI reflects the Kingston Police's expectation of continued student celebrations spanning from homecoming to the Halloween weekend, including the typical fake homecoming of the weekend directly following the normal homecoming. According to preliminary reports from the Kingston Police and the City of Kingston, enforcement levels this year have been similar to past homecoming weekends. A full breakdown of charges and incidents is expected to be released later this week. In other news, this past Friday, October 17th, Queen's University hosted a broadly attended public lecture titled Decoding the Cosmos: What the Universe is Telling Us, as part of the McDonald Institute's Public Science Series. This event, held in the Isabel Bader Center for the Performing Arts, featured Dr. Natalie Ouellette, astrophysicist and outreach scientist for the James Webb Space Telescope. Dr. Ouellette gave a talk on how new astronomical instruments are helping scientists uncover the secrets of the universe. From exoplanet atmospheres to the structure of distant galaxies, the lecture highlighted both cutting-edge discoveries and the importance of the sciences. The event drew students, faculty, and Kingston community members, many of whom remained afterwards for a Q&A session with Dr. Ouellette. For those who missed it, highlights and a recording may be made available on the McDonald Institute's website in the coming weeks. This has been Henry with your Campus Beat. Up next is your sports desk with Eliza and Jesse.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Monday, October 20th, daytime high of 15 degrees with a 97% chance of precipitation. And that rain will cool things off for the rest of the week. Tuesday, October 21st, high of 15 with a 60% chance of rain, overnight low of 9 degrees. Wednesday, October 22nd, daytime high of just 12 degrees with more rain in the forecast and 85% chance of precipitation, dropping down to 8 overnight. Thursday, October 23rd, coldest day of the week so far. Daytime high of 11, feeling closer to 7 with a 70% chance of rain, dropping down to 5 overnight. Friday, October 24th, high of 9 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud. Saturday, October 25th, it's going to be a cool day here in the city of Kingston. Still worth checking out the Queens Gaels versus McMaster Marauders playoff football game. Daytime high of 11 with a mix of sun and cloud. And then Sunday, October 26th, daytime high of 10. Sunny conditions, but it'll feel closer to 11, dropping down to 7 overnight. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. Aberdeen, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity. Albert, Princess 2 Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity. Barrie, Queen 2 Colborne is closed to accommodate construction activity. Barrie, Union 2 Bagot is closed October 20th to 24th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. for ongoing construction work. Earl Street, Collingwood 2 Toronto is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Johnson Street at Victoria is closed until October 24th for sewer separation and road rehabilitation. John Marks Avenue at Highway 15 is closed October 20th to 23rd from 7 to 7 to accommodate road works. Kings Court Ave, Concession, and First Ave is closed until November 21st for gas main installation. Sydenham Street, Princess 2 Queen is closed until October 24th for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Tivoli Avenue, Midland 2 Sierra is closed until October 24th for the installation of new services. Victoria Street, Union 2 Johnson is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, delays for the construction of new active transportation, infrastructure, and intersection upgrades. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, delays for the installation of sanitary and water main utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle, expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 overhead structure. John Marks Avenue and Innovation Drive, delays while a contractor mobilizes to work on John Marks, Innovation Drive, and Discovery Avenue. Lancaster Drive, Limestone to Jasper, contractor will be delaying things for the construction of new sidewalk and road. Montreal at John Counter, Trudell, development to Danbury, and Victoria Street and Earl Street will all have delays due to construction work.
Hey, how's it going? I'm Ellie MacArthur, a CFRC intern from the Queen's Department of History, and it's time for our concerts and events calendar for the week. Starting with concerts, there's a little something for everyone, so stay tuned. On Monday, celebrate Women's History Month with Inner Harbor Jazz at the RCHA starting at 4:30 p.m. Always a cozy spot for some smooth tunes and good company. And in the Monday Musical Residency Series, John McClurg plays The Coven at 4 p.m. On Tuesday, catch Tom's Tuesday Afternoon Happy Hour Jam at the RCHA from 4 to 7 p.m. And later, catch Roots Tuesdays with Joe Nolan at The Coven starting at 5. If you're feeling like playing some music yourself, Open Mic with Carrick McAllister is at Jersey Sports Bar at 7 p.m., and Paula Wood and Friends plays Time Out Bar at 6 p.m. On Wednesday, catch acoustic duo Grapes of Wrath at the Broom Factory starting at 7:30 p.m., and the Kingston Blues Society presents Jeff Dunn at the RCHA starting at 7 p.m. Red Dirt Skinners have been described as the Pink Floyd of folk music. They play at Crossroads United Church at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, so you can be the judge. At the Mansion, Hotel Nora and Bleecker play from 7 to 11 p.m. And my favorite, the open mic at Hotel Wolf Island starts at 7:30 p.m. On Thursday, it's Queer Night at the Screening Room. Catch the Rocky Horror Picture Show 1975 and Costume Contest starting at 9:15 p.m. If you're looking for some spooky music, Brownman's Halloween Thriller Jazz Hip Hop Trumpet plays the RCHA starting at 7 p.m. and Original Thursdays with Emily Steele is at the Coven starting at 5 p.m. Also on Thursday at Musiki, 7:30 to 11:30 p.m., Aaron Wilder, Emma Jean, and Kingston Must See Kyra play. On Friday the 24th, Queens Music Club presents a homecoming show at the Mansion featuring Sleep on the Couch, Doghouse, and Two Time, three emerging bands that always bring high energy and Queen spirit. The show starts at 8. At the Spire, see Candlelight, featuring Vivaldi's Four Seasons and more, with the Laesto Spring Quartet. This show starts at 6:30 p.m. And Mamma Mia, also at the Spire, Candlelight Tribute to ABBA String Quartet starts at 8:30. If you're more in the mood for some alternative rock, Squid Pistol plays at the Royal Tavern 2.0 starting at 9 p.m. Stephen Fearing and the Sentimentals and Bissette play Le Sesame Theater at 7:30 p.m. Scott Owen plays the Creekside Bar at 6 p.m. Jeff Callery at the Coven at 5 p.m. And if you're in the mood to groove, Brent Buck Tingley plays the RCHA from 8 to 11 p.m. On Saturday, The Buckle presents the Good Country Music Show starting at 7:30 and featuring live music from Jenny Whitley, Luther Wright, Emily Steele and The Deal, and The Millwrights. Big Fat Horn Band plays the RCHA starting at 8 p.m. and Halloween Hoedown, the Adam Knapp Band, plays the Coven at 8 p.m. Hit the open mic with Carrick McAllister at K&R Sports Bar at 7 p.m. and Grand On Stage presents Tom Morello at Kingston Grand Theater starting at 7:30 p.m. Lud Temper, Black Absinthe, Sweet Machete, and Dusty Coyote play The Mansion starting at 9 p.m. and Craig Cardiff plays Musiki from 5:30 to 7:30 as well as 9 to 11 p.m. Also on Saturday, No Limits is classic rock covers at Tiernan Og starting at 9 p.m. Looking for something fun to do Sunday afternoon? Catch Canadian Songbook, hits of Neil Young, Bruce Cockburn, Alana Miles, Gord Lightfoot, and more at the Broom Factory starting at 2:30. Sundays with Eric and Megan, folk duo, play The Coven at 5 p.m. MW2, Mozart and Schubert Music, is at the Isabel Bader Center starting at 2:30 p.m. And the Ontario Festival of Small Halls presents Danny Mitchell at Joshua Bates Center at 7:30 p.m. And those are your concerts for this week, October 20th to 26th. Thanks so much for joining us. If you have a concert you'd like to add to our online and on-air concert calendar, reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. Hey, how's it going? My name is Ellie MacArthur, the CFRC intern from Queen's Department of History, and it's time for our events calendar for this week. On Monday, start strong with Unbounded Stories, Stories for Learning and Healing, with speaker Azadim Huamda at 355 King Street West at 10 a.m. This workshop highlights the human face of the Palestinian story while also connecting the broader human experience, fostering empathy, and building strong relationships through meaningful dialogue. You can register for this event through the Queen's events calendar. Also on Monday, all are welcome at the Indigenous Drumming at Trellis HIV and Community Care Center at 1 to 3 p.m. The Queen's University Archives Lecture takes place at Stauffer Library, room 014, starting at 3 p.m., and the Housemate Search and Pumpkin Painting Social takes place in the JDUC from 5 to 6:30 p.m. If you're interested in ballet, Grand On Stage presents Ailey the Second Dance Company, the next generation of dance, at the Kingston Grand Theater starting at 7:30 p.m. And Trivia begins at 8 p.m. at Something in the Water Brewing. On Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturday, Kingston Public Market takes place from 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. On Wednesday the 22nd, Accessibility First Speaker Series with Dr. Sarah Silverman, Access Friction, What Can We Learn from Situations on Which Access Needs Differ in Conflict, is an online lecture at 1 p.m. You can also register for this event through the Queen's Events calendar. Book lovers can join the Science Fiction and Fantasy Book Club at Stauffer Library's Fireplace Reading Room starting at 7 p.m. And if you're in the mood for some karaoke, at 7 p.m. it starts at Jersey Sports Bar, at 8 p.m. it starts at Timeout Bar, and at 9 it starts at The Mansion. On Thursday, brush up on your fun facts and head over to Trivia at Riverhead at 7 p.m. or to Queen's Pub at 9 p.m. On Friday, October 24th, Board Teachers, The Struggle is Real comedy tour takes place at Kingston Grand Theater starting at 7:30 p.m. And in the mood for some Halloween fun, the Creepy Dolls Museum is at the Broom Factory from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. Or if you're looking for some mental stimulation, Who Owns Our Knowledge? A Practical Guide to Open Access at Queen's takes place at Stauffer Library, room 014, starting at 1 p.m. On Saturday, the Creepy Dolls Museum continues. This all-ages event starts at 5 and goes till 9:30. And the Masquerade Gala at Our Lady of Fatima Parish starts at 5:30 p.m. Take a walk at Milburn Creek Nature Reserve Trail before it gets cold to see the Wild Art Walk 2025. This runs until the 31st. That's it for our events calendar from October 20th to 26th. Thank you so much for joining me this week. If you have an event that you would like to add to our online or on-air event calendar, reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. Thanks so much.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.
Hi, and welcome back to Cuban Sounds in Canada, where we hear from the many Cuban and Cuban-adjacent musicians who perform in Canada. I'm your host, Karen Dubinsky. Montuno West is a group I learned about this summer as I started researching Cuban diaspora musicians in different parts of the country. They call Calgary their home, although some of them live in Edmonton and one in Vancouver. They are a really incredible mix of Canadian-born, Venezuelan, and Cuban-born members. The two Cubans are well-known rumberos who play in the Afro-Cuban drumming tradition. I was lucky to see them perform in Ottawa recently at the second annual Latin Jazz Conference there. They played at the National Arts Center the first night of the conference, and they literally brought the house down. I'm going to play two pieces from their second CD called Raices, which came out last year in 2024. The first song we'll hear is called Coquito, and then we'll continue with Choro Paca.
Oye, me rompe el coco, como me pone el coco.
Coquito que pongas tú.
Así. Sabroso.
Y otro que ponga yo, eso basta pa' qué.
Con un poquito de los dos.
Un poquito que ponga tú.
Ja.
Y otro que ponga yo, eso basta pa' qué.
Ja. Oye.
Un poquito que pongas tú.
Así.
Y otro que ponga yo, eso basta pa' qué.
Como me pone el coco. Get back.
Drummer Ahmed Mitchell is another Cuban musician in Canada who recently released a new album. Mitchell is from the city of Matanzas in Cuba and has been in Canada since 2006. He's had quite an active career in this country, which is really reflected in his second album. It's called Silent Era, which includes a wealth of Cuban musicians in and around Toronto, as well as some directly from Cuba. The first song we'll hear, Round Tree, has vocals from Addis Rodriguez, a Cuban vocalist in Canada who is also Mitchell's partner. After that, we'll hear Los Aires, written by Mitchell himself.
Thank you.
I'm going to play some Miguel de Armas now. We've heard from him before on this show. He's the pianist who arrived in Ottawa in 2011 and, along with his partner, Yasmina Proveer, have helped to create a really strong following for Cuban and Latin sounds, especially jazz, in Ottawa and beyond. Yasmina and Miguel were the driving force behind the Latin Jazz Conference I just participated in Ottawa, which brought together musicians, journalists, and academics for three wonderful days at the National Arts Center. The last concert of the conference was the Ottawa Latin Jazz Orchestra under the direction of Miguel de Armas. Their 2023 album, From Me to You, includes this beautiful song, Laura and Miguel, a tribute to Miguel's parents. After that, we'll hear Rumba on Kent Street. There's an Ottawa-based song, if I've ever heard one. We'll end with this. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.